Okay, so this talk is all about identity management for Office 365. It's about time to get started, so we'll give it a go. My name's Paul Andrew. I'm a technical product manager on the Office 365 team, and I cover identity management and also our data centers and our networks and performance issues that may be related to networks, related to Office 365 users connecting to Office 365. So this talk is all about the different options you have for setting up identity management with Office 365. We'll talk about those options. Those options are the cloud identity model, synchronized identity, or federated identity. I'll walk through actually setting up the latter two options. The first one, there's no setup required. So we'll take a look at what's actually involved. I'll give you some advice about how to choose between the different options. And we'll take a look at some of the third-party identity management solutions that you can integrate with Office 365 as well. All right, so if that sounds good, we'll get going. Has anyone got experience doing identity integration with Office 365? Yeah, one, two. All right, so you guys are going to be presenting this to other people next time. All right, we'll see how we go. So here are the three models that we have for identity management with Office 365. We have this cloud identity model, which essentially means you're going to use our Office 365 portal and you're going to add your users there. That's it. That's what it means. There's a few other things you can do with it, but essentially zero on-premises servers. You're setting it all up through the web browser and you're adding your users there. The second one is synchronized. Since most people do have some kind of on-premises directory that they want to keep using, we synchronize with that on-premises directory so that users can be provisioned into Office 365. It's worth pointing out that unlike some of the consumer-based identity systems, consumer-based mail systems that you may be familiar with, you actually have to have a... is it turning off? I don't know what it's doing. Okay, it's gone away. You actually have to have users provisioned into Office 365 before they can sign in. So if you're using a consumer identity and you have a website, you can basically just sign in with that consumer identity to a lot of websites. You don't have to be pre-set up or anything like that. The reason that works is because really the website is only looking for your name and your photo, and it's happy to just take that information and trust the identity provider that's come through. We need more than that. We need to not only trust the identity provider, but we also need to know that you've got a license, that your administrator for the tenant has decided you are one of the people who should be signing in. We also want to put you in the global address list so people can send you email, and we want you to appear in SharePoint's People Picker so that you can get files shared with you. So you have to be pre-synchronized before you can actually just sign in. So the synchronized model is we just do that synchronization of the user identities before the users come in and sign in. And then the third one is federated identity. The federated model is where first you synchronize the users up to the cloud, and then each time the user signs in, that user's credentials are going to be tested by the identity management system that they're familiar with, which is not Office 365, it's some other system. So that way the password for the user or anything related to the password does not have to be shared with Office 365, it's not in the cloud. There's some other system that is validating that password. The federation points to password validation as the federated model. So we'll talk about that a bit more. So we have three models. The first model is very, very simple. You just connect to the Office 365 portal and you work through the web. The second one, you've got to do a little bit beforehand, but we will walk through setting that up, and you'll see it really does take just a few minutes to set up identity synchronization. It's really easy to do that. The third one takes a little bit longer, but as a benefit of that, you are able to address more sophisticated scenarios that you find with some companies, and you're also able to make sure that password information or password validation is done on-premises by the company that owns that data. So you get some benefits with that as well. We'll talk through exactly what those benefits are. You can see the number of servers on-premises that are required for each of the items listed down the bottom of the slide. All right, so before we get too far into this, I wanted to talk about some of the terms that we use in identity integration, synchronization, and federation. And so this starts with Bob over on the left. So if Bob wants to get access, he's got to be in a directory. He's typically in a directory that's on-premises in the yellow box there. And his account's got to be synchronized up into Azure Active Directory. So Office 365 uses Azure Active Directory for all its identity management uses. It's been this way since we started Office 365, since before Azure Active Directory had a name. We were using Azure Active Directory. And so all of the users, all of the license provisioning information, the tenant, how the users are related together, all of that is stored in Azure Active Directory. And that is even the case if you're using a federated identity provider, because we have to synchronize those identities into Azure Active Directory so that we can get direct access to it from Office 365. We replicate those AD controllers for Azure Active Directory with the Office 365 services so that we can look them up really quickly. So we synchronize the accounts into Azure Active Directory. And then the second thing that happens with Azure Active Directory is if there is a federated sign-in request required, what we're going to do then is Azure AD will request the sign-in page from the on-premises identity provider, this box here, and the on-premises identity provider will show a web page that essentially has username and a box and password and a box. And that on-premises identity provider will capture that information and it will validate the password and it will give us a token back to Azure Active Directory that that confirms that the user is allowed to be signed in. They've passed their, they've got their password correct, and we can use this token as an Office 365 service or as a client to gain access to Office 365 and gain access to the directory. So it's all about getting these tokens, and the token is shared with the various red services over there, SharePoint Online, Exchange, Web Access, and such. And there are two different ways that you can do sign-in with Office 365, and we refer to these as passive auth and active auth. And passive auth, I just talked about, yeah, it's a web page and we're going to ask for your username and password, and actually that can be passed on to an on-premises identity provider. It can ask for your username and password. The benefit of that is Azure Active Directory is not showing you that page. Your Outlook client or whatever it is not showing you that page that asks for your password. So it's not capturing your password, not doing anything with it. It's very obvious to you that it's not doing with it because this is a web page coming from your identity provider. Now, we refer to that as passive auth. And the reason we refer to it as passive auth is the application that wants you to sign in really doesn't have to do anything. They essentially just get a 401 unauthorized. And their response to the 401 unauthorized is to redirect you, or get a 302. They redirect you to the identity provider, and then they wait till a valid page comes back with that signed-in token. All right, so they're really just showing a web page, and the web page doesn't have a sign-in token, so they wait and they redirect and they wait. And you can be looking at as many different web pages from the identity provider as you need to. Maybe your password needs reset. Maybe you have two-factor authentication. Maybe you have to agree to some terms, I don't know. The client app is passive, it doesn't care, it just waits for this token to show that shows that you're signed in to come through from the identity provider that it trusts. So that's passive auth. Active auth is just the opposite. And active auth is what we have as the only option with Outlook today, which pops up a dialogue. Outlook throws up a dialogue, and it has a username and password. And I think it asks you for your password twice, and it asks you for some other things, and you hit next. What is happening there is Outlook is actually capturing your password from that page, and it's got to send it to Exchange Online. Now, it sends it over an SSL channel, so it's encrypted. It actually sends it as basic auth over an SSL channel, and Exchange Online will use Azure AD to validate that password or use an identity provider. But this is known as active auth, active in that the client has to take an active part in the authentication. There's a couple of downsides with active auth. One is that you know the client has to have your password in memory at some point. It has to have that there. So whilst as the client developer working for Microsoft, we work hard to make sure that that's secure, the fact is that the password has to be in memory before it's sent off. And it has to be under the control of that client application. I don't know that it's just the identity provider that sees it. The second is it's not very flexible. Like, if we wanted to change the way that password was gathered, two-factor auth is a typical scenario here. I'd have to go and rewrite the Outlook client to do that, and that's really hard to do. So active auth is not as flexible as the passive auth environments. All right, so we went through some terminology there. There's a couple of other things here. Azure Active Directory is an extensible identity provider. It's extensible in a bunch of different ways. It does support these industry standard protocols, AWS Federation, AWS Trust, SAML. Shibboleth is an identity interop protocol which is based on SAML, SAML 1.1 with some extensions. So when I see Shibboleth and when I see SAML, they're largely the same thing as far as Office 365 and Azure AD are concerned. So both SAML or Shibboleth and AWS Federation are XML-based protocols that allow you to set up that passive authentication dialogue. So you would use AWS Federation or you would use SAML to say, hey, I need to get an identity provider sign-in page from an identity provider. And you would use that to ask that, make that request. And it has a couple of fields in that XML that's sent to make sure that the client can trust the server and the server can trust the client and that you're going to get back the token that you need at the end of that. Very, very simplistically, that's what those protocols are about. Both AWS Federation and SAML actually use SAML tokens inside of those protocols. Although they are different protocols, they're both standards-based protocols, they do use the same kind of token. They both use SAML tokens. Kind of a confusing thing about those. AWS Trust is an active protocol, so it takes a digest of the password and it takes the username and it encrypts those and puts them in the XML packet, and AWS Trust is used to do that. The Office Windows clients, so like Office 2013, Office 2010 clients, use AWS Federation and actually use AWS Trust, excuse me. So they use AWS Trust for connecting, apart from Outlook, which uses basic auth over SSL to exchange online. All of the other ones use AWS Trust, and they do that from something you may be familiar with, the Microsoft Online Services Sign and Assistant. This used to be installed separately to Office 365 Outlook, Office 365 Pro Plus. It's now installed with Office 365 Pro Plus, so you don't see it as much now, but there is this Sign and Assistant that runs in the background that implements AWS Trust and signs users in on your behalf. All right, so a little bit of terminology. Are there questions about that terminology before I move on? I don't really need you to remember all of that right now. I'll use a couple of those terms as we go through, but not too many. Okay, so the first identity model is a cloud identity model, and we have this URL, portal.office.com, where you can go and it will ask you to sign in to Office 365. And you can also go to that portal, sign in as an administrative user on your tenant. If you're not an administrative user on your tenant, just go create a trial tenant and try it out. It's free to do that, and you can see what's involved in doing that. And you'll see a screen like this when you're an admin. This is Office 365 Admin Center. And so there's a Users and Groups tab on the left-hand side, and you can go ahead and add users in there. There's an example there just of the screenshot here. And you can put in some details. Now, there's a few downsides to doing this. It's great if you just have a few hundred users. It's okay to type them in all one at a time. But if you have a lot of users, you probably have some internal systems. You probably don't want to have people going and typing in new users when they join the company. It's typically there's some integration involved here. The cloud-based model does allow you to upload users with a CSV file, but for any deeper integration, you're going to want to look at an on-premises identity provider and synchronizing those up into Office 365. You can actually use PowerShell, and you can synchronize users up to Office 365 with that as well. For whatever reason, people mostly do the synchronization option if they have lots of users. All right, we will talk more specifically about how you choose between them. So a synchronized model, you have an on-premises Active Directory, and coming soon is support for LDAP v3 directories and other less structured directories. And so we run this tool called Azure AD Sync Services. We used to use a tool called DirSync. DirSync was what we used for the longest time. Azure AD Sync Services is from the same team, a new tool which does a lot of the same things. It's very, very familiar if you're familiar with DirSync. I'm going to show you Azure AD Sync Services today. You can synchronize your user accounts and also password hashes. So we synchronize password hashes up to Azure AD, and that means that a user can sign into Office 365 and they can use this same password in the cloud as they are familiar with on-premises. This is not the same as federated sign-in. It doesn't mean something on premises is doing the password validation. We do have to store a hash of the password in the cloud. And you don't get single sign-in. There's no point at which you're signed in already on your PC and Office 365 just magically knows you're signed in already. This is a separate sign-in, but it's very convenient if you're looking to just have the same password for your users in the cloud as they are on premises. All right, so that's synchronized identity model. All right, so we're going to drill into the sync identity model for a little bit, and I want to show you installing Azure AD Sync services. It's going to take just a few minutes, but before you do it, you do want to do some prerequisite things. We have documentation at this URL. This goes to MSDN. This URL, aka.ms/AADsync, is where our documentation is. We're going to run a tool called IDfix first, which is going to take a look at your on-premises Active Directory and just see if there's any issues with that directory before we synchronize. If you synchronize an on-premises AD that has issues, any records that have problems will not be synchronized, and you'll get error messages in the event log on the sync machine. It's much more convenient to run AD sync first, ID fix first, and fix those. General rule of thumb is if your directory has been in production for more than 10 years, it's going to have a whole bunch of issues. If it's less than 10 years, probably fine. The reason is simply that people build lots of projects into their on-premises directories. There's lots of integration goes on. And if it's been 5 or 10 years, chances are you've had a project which has added some characters which we now consider invalid, or some ways of referring to URLs that we used to recommend but we don't recommend anymore, or something like that. It's recommended to verify the DNS before you do this. If you don't verify the DNS beforehand, that's okay. However, any of your sign-in IDs, UPNs, etc., that use DNSs that you haven't verified, we're going to remove those. So it's okay, but it's not very useful. You have to come back later. You've got to verify those IDs, and then you've got to cause the sync to happen again, and then we'll let them through. But if you do use DNS, Microsoft.com or something, and you don't have that verified in your Office 365, we don't know that you own that DNS, so we won't let you use those sign-in names. So we'll just strip them off, and so you'll be left with whatever tenant name at tenantname.onmicrosoft.com is the replacement that you'll see if you do that. So it's convenient to verify the DNS domains before you do the sync. It's not 100% required though. Directories other than Active Directory we'll talk about in a bit. One server is most common. AAD sync can only be run on a single server for a tenant. So you can't have multiple servers running AAD sync connecting to the same tenant. You can't do that with separate parts of the directory, and you can't do that for backup purposes either. One server is the most common way that people set this up. Now, the reason it doesn't really matter for backup purposes is, I'm going to install this, and once we get there, it's going to take just a few minutes to do that. And so, if you have an outage, I just recommend going and setting up another server and running it up again. The first sync takes a little bit of time. However, part of the first sync is synchronizing and assigning GUIDs in the cloud based on the users on premises. And once you've done that, actually the subsequent syncs are much faster. The first sync runs at 5,000 users per hour, I think that's the number. So that can take a little bit of time. After that, it's much faster. You can use dedicated SQL Server if you want. Our sync architecture is that we sync from AD to a SQL Server, and then we sync from that SQL Server to in the cloud. That allows us to know what has changed between AD and the cloud because we maintain that local database. You can put that on SQL Server. You can have your SQL Server in HA mode. Do whatever you want. You can back it up. You can even restore it. We have some instructions about restoring it and restoring the keys we use to encrypt the data because that SQL Server, that database is encrypted, so that you can run up a new Azure AD Sync install and then use that existing database. But if you resync from scratch, it shouldn't really matter unless you've got 500,000 users or something. You can also install in IaaS. You can put the whole thing in the cloud if you don't want to add any new on-premises servers. We find a number of customers do have this mandate of do not add any more on-prem administrative servers. So that's fine. You can put it in IaaS. You can migrate from DirSync or Forefront Identity Manager, and we have guidance at that MSDN page for how to do that. You do require Forest Functional Level 2003. It is not an in-place upgrade, no. No. But it has some good instructions there about how to do it. You can do it side by side, and you can then validate that you're getting the same thing. Yeah, yeah. But no, we don't support in-place. All right, so IDFix. I want to recommend this tool. I want to take a look at it. Actually, the best way to do that is let's just go in and have a look at the tool. It seems we've got a couple of my slides out of order. All right, so we're going to go and take a look at IDFix. IDFix is a download from Microsoft in our download server. So once you download it, you get this thing. It asks you for a privacy statement here. And then here is the tool. And so the tool just connects to your local domain in AD that the machine is part of. And I can just go and run a query. The query is going to look up all of the users in the domain. I'm running this on a machine that has AD and Exchange Server installed. And I have purposely gone in and put some records in the directory that have various things wrong with them. So we can look at some of those. You can see here that a bunch of these have a back tick character in their names, which is not allowed in Azure AD. Ampersand is also not allowed. Moving on down here. Various other disallowed characters. And then we've got a few .local addresses. These are disallowed top-level domains.
Is there any way around that if the customer's got split local?
If you've got a .local already, what are the best practices for solving that? So there's a few ways you can solve that. You can, of course, go and rename them all, which is generally the best recommended way of doing it. We do support alternate sign-in ID as well. So if you've got a UPN which has, if you've got a UPN which is user at domain.local, then the best thing to do is to set up a script and decide when you're going to do it, run it off out of hours, and actually rename them. If you can't do that, and we find people can't do that because they have some app, whatever it is, often it's a customized app which relies on that. And this was a Microsoft recommendation for a long time to use that kind of format. If you can't rename them, we do support an alternate ID for sign-in now, so you don't have to use the UPN. You just leave the UPN alone, use another attribute. And commonly this would be the mail attribute, but it's up to you to specify what that is. If you do that, you have to configure ADFS to be able to understand that, assuming you're using ADFS. You've got to configure it with PowerShell for Azure AD so that it knows what that difference is. And there are also some things that don't work all that well. One of them that is very notable is Office 365 sign-in will default to UPN regardless of what you've done. So your users are going to have to say, change my sign-in, and then they're going to have to put in the mail, the address that they've used. There's a question over here. Right, so the one I mentioned, there are a couple of others that are more minor, which we have documented on TechNet that you can take a look at for. I don't remember off the top of my head, but there are some other things that don't work as expected that you have to do work for. Yep. All right, so here's our tool, back to our tool. So I've run my query. I'm going to accept this. This tool actually allows you to, it logs all of its changes. It allows you to roll them back. It allows you to modify them. You can actually even go in and decide, you edit and decide what you want to set them to. So I'm just going to go and apply that. And it's complete. All right, so it's possible to roll back, undo, and do logs, that sort of thing if you want to watch through it. It's really a tool to help you with remediation. Okay, so that's the first bit of setting up our connection from our on-premises server. I'm going to come back to that server in a minute, and connecting it for synchronization to the cloud. Apologize, I got a couple of my slides out of order. Actually, I think I see what's gone on with my slides. I seem to have deleted my demo slides. So we'll carry on looking at that system. I usually expect to have a slide that comes up that says, do the demo now, and then switch over, and they're just, it's not there, so I got a bit confused, sorry. All right, so we're going to carry on with this thing. So the next thing that I have to do before I do any synchronization is I've got to actually go to my Office 365 tenant, and I've got that set up here. So let's take a look at that. Here I've just gone to portal.office365.com, so you can see where I'm coming from, and we're going to go to admin for Office 365, and then we're going to go into that users tab here and look at the active users. So you can see I've got a single user here. My tenant is SU2A that I'm using, and I'm going to set up Active Directory synchronization. Now, it's got some guidance here for how to do this. So it's got some great stuff. You notice it's pointing currently to the DuraSync tool. We're going to swap that out for Azure AD Sync in a couple of months. There's just one or two things we have left to do there. For now, I just need to go in and click Activate Active Directory synchronization, and that's the only task that I need to do on my tenant. I'm required to do that, otherwise it won't let me synchronize these IDs in. Okay, so once I've done that, I'm going to go ahead and use Azure Active Directory Sync services. And this tool is just downloadable from the Microsoft Download Center. It actually runs in two parts, and I've run the first part already. And the first part is where it installs the bits on the local drive. It installs the local SQL Server instance, and it takes more than 3 minutes, so I've done that beforehand. After I did that, I exit it, and it puts this icon on the desktop, so if you do exit it and come back, it's very convenient. I also logged out, because another thing that it does is it creates a local admin group that I'm going to be using to connect to these things. So it's done those two things. And now we're going to connect to that Azure, to my Office 365 tenant. So my credentials are admin. All right, I put my password in there. So at this point, it's going to authenticate against that tenant. It's going to check that I've set that tenant to be able to synchronize. I'm running this server on a VM back in Redmond, which seems to be connecting pretty well. So key enhancements of this tool versus DuraSync. The big one that people have been asking about is multiple forest support. So I'm going to go and add this forest, which is called EXHB. 6689 DOM. So when I click Add Forest, I can actually add more of them there. You'll see in a second. So I click Add Forest, and then it adds this down the bottom, and then I can add another one in there. And you can add large numbers of them. We had a discussion about how many a little while back. I don't remember, remember exactly what it was, but it was more than the customer needed. All right, so we've added a connection to Azure AD and then also into our local forest. And then I'm just going to add this one local forest. That's all I have on my test server. And we're going to go ahead. And now we're going to see some of the, in a moment, we'll see some of the other things that this has advanced over DuraSync. So if I have multiple forests, now I don't, so I can just skip through this. But if I have multiple forests, then we want to take a look at how you're going to match users between those multiple forests. And so there's broadly three ways that you can do that. You can either say that your users are unique across these forests. They have no shadow accounts or duplicates or anything like that. Or you can say you can match them using a specific attribute. And you might be matching user specific attribute that is a GUID due to the fact that they're shadowed in some way. Or you might be just matching them because you know you have duplicates in these multiple forests. It's quite common to use your own attribute here as an example. I know people who certainly do that. And so this is because in Azure AD, we do not have multiple forests. We just have a single one, so you have to match those up. All right, so we're going to hit next here. And then I can say password synchronization, and I'm also going to say app and attribute filtering. And you'll notice a couple of extra items in my wizard appeared when I did that. You can also choose password writeback. Password writeback does require additional subscription license. Typically, the Azure AD Premium or Azure EMS license are required for password write-back. Password write-back is part of the hybrid features which are over and above what you get with Office 365. So I'm going to select password sync. I'm also selecting this app and attribute filtering. And we'll go ahead. Now, because I said app and attribute filtering, and this is something DirSync doesn't do either, it's given me a list of applications that I might be synchronizing for, and I'm going to deselect all of those and just select Office 365 Pro Plus. And what this will do is just show me a list of attributes from that application that I'm going to synchronize. So it's reducing the number of attributes that I synchronize. And I can even go and reduce this even further. And you can see there's a couple of them which are required. Account enabled is a flag which says whether the account is able to log in or blocked. This is just classic old AD one. And then I'm going to pretty much remove all of the rest of these. All right, so if I do this, I still have to have a source anchor. That's good. And I have to have a user principal name. That's my sign-in address. Can't remove those. I also want to add usage location back, because if a user is synchronized into Office 365 and doesn't have a user location, we can't allow a license to be assigned. We have to know the country where the user is located in order to validate against certain legal regulations that we have to meet. I also would really like to use display name. If you don't have display name, your users just appear with blank display names. And it will show the UPN or the sign-in name there as well. But if you, it is a bit of an impact on both the users and administrators if their display name is not synced. So I'm going to add those two back in. And I'm left with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So this is a bare minimum just for Office 365 Pro Plus. I can tell that I only want those attributes to be synced. All right, so let's continue here. We're ready. And actually, I think we're finished. We've finished with data that we had to enter. It's all wizard-based, and it's pretty much ready to go. Now, there's another tool that that is on here, which is Synchronization Service, it's called. So this tool is also not conveniently included with DirSync, but this tool is going to, once these rules have finished updating, it's going to show me the status of the sync services. So we can watch that without going into the event log.
You have to actually go through and check.
Yeah. Yep. There's another tool in there. I don't know whether you saw that. I hadn't planned to demo it, but I'll show you where it is. So this synchronization rules editor will actually let you open and edit and do whatever you want with the sync rules that the sync service is using. Again, not something you can do with DirSync.
Does it still require the ADFS role installed?
ADFS role installed on the DirSync? No, you don't require that for DirSync or Azure AD Sync. It's required for ADFS, of course, but not for these tools. It's taking a moment longer than I'd hoped. All right, so it's going to sync now. And just like DirSync, it will run its sync up front, and we can watch it on this this dashboard. When it does sync, of course, it syncs every 3 hours. It syncs attribute and user changes. And we actually don't recommend that you change that for supportability purposes. We've set that 3 hours. If you start running it a lot closer together, we have some non-optimal behaviors. We do sync password hashes every 2 minutes, so if passwords are changed by users, they typically want to go and use their password, so we change that every 2 minutes. Hey, you can watch what's going on here. You can see it's doing a sync into the local domain and then into Azure AD. It's doing an import, and then it's doing a sync, and then it's doing an export. And actually, this is the last operation, this export, so we can go back to our dashboard and take a look at our users. Let's just go back. Active users. So they should be about synced by now.
What happens with existing users that you may either import from CSV in like a fast compile or something?
Yep.
What happens to those user accounts?
So great question. What happens to existing users? Pretty much the best option that you would expect to happen. If you have duplicates, we do two types of matching for duplicates. We do a hard match where we look for the source anchor. You saw that source anchor. The source anchor is the on-premises one. There's another equivalent GUID that's in the cloud. We match those up, and if they match, we know it's the same user, so we're going to synchronize data from on-prem into the cloud. If that hasn't been done, which is the case if you're starting out from scratch, then we'll go ahead and match the UPNs and the SMTP address. And if we find one and only one match between those, between an on-prem and a cloud user, then we'll line up the GUIDs and we'll say, yep, that's a match. We call that a soft match, but essentially it's doing the same thing. The hard match is when you already have the GUID there. So if your users, if you've typed in a whole lot of users and they're actually the same, we're pretty much going to match those up without any too much trouble. It will just become a single user. When we do the sync, we'll do that soft match and we'll go, okay, this is the same user, so we're going to overwrite what's in the cloud with what's on-prem. We're not going to take what's in the cloud and write it back. And then what we do, you can see this status over here. It says in cloud for my initial user that I created, and then the rest of them say synced with Active Directory. I can't go in and edit these ones that say synced with Active Directory. I can delete it. I can't edit the details that come from on-prem, but the ones that are in the cloud, I can go ahead and do whatever I want with those because they're owned by me in the cloud. You can't actually edit users' names and other details that are synced from on-prem. And so if for some reason you want to go back to cloud-only identity, you can turn off the sync, and these change from synced with Active Directory back to in cloud. And then you can edit them in the cloud, and you're just using them disconnected from your local AD. We don't go and delete them or anything like that. If I've disconnected them?
No, my question is, though, the cloud identity, right?
Yep.
You get a different SMTP or sign-in address.
Yes. If I had had, let me explain it a different way. If I had had a Paul Andrew with the email sign-in name admin at that address on-prem, that would now be set to synced with Active Directory, and it would have copied the detail. Because I didn't, it's left it as cloud ID. So it was just an additional user that I didn't have on-prem. Yep. All right. So after you're finished, we have a log file that you can go and take a look at for Azure AD Sync. As I mentioned, you can go and take a look at that rules editor and modify those if you need to. A couple of things you can do with the rules. You can actually specify what OUs you want to sync. So you might go and edit the rules before you start syncing for the first time to make sure you're not syncing users you don't want to sync or doing other things. You can also create custom attributes that are calculated based on other values. So there's quite a lot you can do in there. All right, about 5,000 objects per hour is the first time sync. Watch out for expiry of the account that you're using to run sync. It has to be up to date for sync to work regardless. You do have to assign licenses after sync has completed. You can do that with PowerShell, but the sync tool itself does not assign Office 365 licenses. You've got to have that set up. Be aware, but we made some changes so you don't really have to be concerned about directory object limits. A new tenant syncs up to 50,000 objects. However, as soon as you have registered a domain, which you're going to want to do before you sync anyway, you're up to 300,000 objects. If you have more than that, you can call support and they'll increase it for you, no problem. We just do that because we don't want new trial tenants being created and people accidentally flooding them with millions and millions of objects because we've got to store them somewhere. Just a note on password hash sync security. We started doing this in June 2003. A hash, of course, a mathematical one-way function, nearly impossible to reverse. The AD actually stores hashes of users' passwords in the directory. It doesn't store the actual password. We take a second hash of that using the SHA-256 algorithm, and it's that second hash that we send to Azure AD. We send that with the Azure AD Sync Services tool, which only connects to Azure AD, by the way. It doesn't connect to any other website and send passwords up there. It only connects to Azure AD, and it uses SSL to verify that we are connected to Azure AD and that the data is encrypted while it sends it up there. So we are very concerned about security at Microsoft and certainly for storing passwords. There are definitely customers who would not want to do this, but if you look through what we're actually doing, you should not be concerned about the security of passwords being stored in Azure AD. Hey, choosing between Dura Sync and Azure AD Sync. I started this slide out a little while ago when Azure AD Sync was still in preview. And the left hand of the slide with Dura Sync has got shorter and shorter as we've gone on. There's still, actually, it's not even right. Password hash sync is now included in Azure AD Sync. So the only thing left on Dura Sync is that it is the default tool that we specify from the admin portal. Otherwise, we're going to recommend Azure AD Sync as the tool to use to sync. All right, there's my demo slide. So the next thing we want to talk about is federated identity model. And so the federated identity model is exactly the same as what we just looked at, but when users sign in, their password is not available to Azure AD at all. And so we have to ask the on-premises identity provider to validate that password and give us back a token. And so traditionally, we would use Active Directory Federation services to do that. You'll notice that password hashes can still be synced. If you check the box, password hashes will be synced. And that can be useful as a backup. If your ADF infrastructure, for some reason, is not working, there's an internet connectivity problem at the site where ADFS is, or there's a power outage or something, this literally means users cannot have their passwords validated. And if they can't have passwords validated, they can't sign in. So you're going to get help desk calls if this happens. And so having password hash as a backup is one way of helping to remediate that. So what that means is the password hash is synchronized from the on-premises directory with the user accounts, but it's not used by Office 365 and Azure AD because you have federation set up. And then if you have an outage with your federation server or your federation service, whatever it might be, you're going to use PowerShell and you're going to configure Office 365 and Azure AD to for that domain to no longer be federated. And so it will revert back to the synchronized mode where it will use those passwords, which conveniently you already have had synchronized into the cloud. If you didn't pre-synchronize them and you wanted to switch back from federated to synchronized because you're having an outage, you'd have to reassign passwords to all of those users or go ahead and set up password hash sync on the original server, which might have, at this point, might have a power outage, which is a likely scenario, so it's going to be too late to do that. So that's a way of having some backup for your federation service. So the sign in here, it goes up to Office 365 and then is bounced back to ADFS on premises. And that means that your user, wherever they are on the internet, they're actually connecting to your site where you have ADFS or another third-party identity provider running. That means you have to have a hole in your firewall so that it can connect in. We're literally having the user connect into your on-premises servers in order to have their password validated. Getting that firewall port opened is often the longest part of an ADFS deployment. I should rephrase that. It's not getting the firewall port open. It's making sure that the people who are responsible for the security of your firewall are comfortable with why you are opening a port in their firewall. That often takes quite a while. So that's how ADFS works in a real small nutshell. There's two parts to ADFS that we have. There's the ADFS role that you mentioned before, and then there's the web application proxy. And the web proxy is designed to run in your internet perimeter network, and then the ADFS server runs inside of your main network. And the web app proxy will route requests for sign-in back through to the ADFS server on-prem. And the ADFS server will show you that web page, and it will validate the password against the local domain controller. And, of course, it will log that it's done that in the local domain controller's logs, something that Office 365 and Azure AD don't do because they're in the cloud and they don't have access to your internal logs. So that's how federation works. And here's another slide talking about password sync as a backup for that. All right, so ADFS is also easy. I talk about synchronized identity as being easy. ADFS can be easy. I mean, it's easy to set up in a lab. If you've read, we have tons of docs for ADFS on TechNet. If you've read the docs and have taken the time to go through those, you can install it in a lab really, really quickly. Alternatively, if you have someone who's experienced or who has had training, then they can do the same sort of thing. A key thing about ADFS is it does a lot more than just provide federated sign-in for Office 365. And if you restrict your deployment of ADFS to just what is required for Office 365, then it is a much simpler deployment than it could be. ADFS does a lot of other things, proxying services for internal internal servers that you might need access to other than just for sign-in. If you do a lot of other things, there's a lot more configuration that may be required for ADFS. Just requires one SSL certificate. You can use other certificates for other purposes of ADFS, but Office 365 only requires one. And we have a new wizard-based install tool, which I want to take a look at. Hey, demo slide in the right place. So this one I have here. So this is a new tool called Azure AD Connect, and the future intention is that this be the only tool that we provide, and if Azure AD Sync Services is required, then this tool will install that on your behalf. You notice it looks very similar to Azure AD Sync. It's got this list of steps down the left-hand side and then some text on the right. It's built by the same org as Azure AD Connect, and we'll walk through an example of running the install here. All right. So it's noticed that some prerequisites are required, one of which, of course, is the Azure AD Sync engine, and so we're going to let it go ahead and install those. And so once it's done that, it's asking for essentially the same credentials that I was asked for when I installed Azure AD Sync Services. So for this one, we're going to use a different tenant. All right, sorry, let me try that again. Admin at contoso.microsoft.com. I have a bad feeling about my password at this point. Let's try. Let's try this one. All right, I got my password right here. So this tool is in preview right now. You can go and download it. but it does not as yet do the deployment of Azure AD Sync services. So it's got a little bit more work to go. All right, so once I've put in my Azure password, there's two modes that I can use here. One is I can go through Express Settings, which just installs Azure AD Sync. So we don't want to see that. We want to see ADFS. So I'm going to say Customize, and then I'm going to choose that I have a single AD forest. You can see that this tool is still in preview. It's got future, some other stuff coming. All right, so we'll select a single one. And then I'm going to specify single sign-on. Password sync, the other option, is just going to go back with Azure AD Sync again. All right, so once we've done that, now it needs to know my Windows Server AD admin credentials, which I've got. Contoso. Okay, so it's connected to my on-prem AD. And now it wants to know whether I'm setting up a new or using an existing ADFS farm. So what it's actually going to do here is it will reach out to newly installed servers, Windows Server 2012 R2 servers, and it will deploy the ADFS role on those servers. So it's going to be asking me for details about an ADFS server or multiple of them, and the web application proxy servers, which are in the firewall, or multiple of them. And it'll reach out remotely, and connect to those and set them up. So I'm going to say configure a new farm. I have to provide that SSL certificate. The certificate is password protected here. It's a different password than before. Okay, so it's got my certificate here. And now it's going to be asking about the servers where I want ADFS to be installed. So we'll go ahead and say server one, and I can add more. And in this case, I'll go and set up a server for the web application proxy. I'm going to use server two. And then it needs credentials to be able to connect to those servers so that it can deploy ADFS on them. All right. So next thing is ADFS requires a managed service account to run as, and fortunately I can ask it just to create one of those for me. And then the last thing that I need to do is in my tenant, in this tenant I have multiple domains defined, and I have to tell it which one is going to be federated. So it's got to run, there's a PowerShell command you run, this is going to do this for me. It's going to specify in this tenant, this domain, contoso.com, is going to be converted from a managed domain. Managed means that it's just in the cloud and the domain is managed by Office 365, to a federated domain, which means that the user sign-in password validation is done on-premises by the identity provider. So we'll select that. All right, so we're reviewing options, and then we can say install. Okay, and then once we are complete with the install, the last thing I have to do is, remember we have to connect into through the firewall to have our password validated. So we've got to connect to that web application proxy. We've also got to have a DNS record, which has got to say fs.my custom domain name set up. So in this case, it needs to be fs.contoso.com, and conveniently, it's going to wait while I go away and set that up or configure that, unless I've done that in advance. So I need that A record to point to a specific server which has the web application proxy on. So it will verify that for me. It's verified that, and it's found it's successful, and we're good to go. So we now have a way of configuring ADFS without actually even going to the machines that you want to set it up on. Yeah.
Quick question. So is it after you install ADFS or before, should you talk to the web proxy guy and tell him to allow those IP addresses and URLs?
So the question is about opening the firewall for inbound connections. Yeah. Should you do that after or before you've configured ADFS? This is one of the reasons why those conversations take a while. You really don't want to have a firewall port open on in your perimeter network where there isn't a server that has been configured and hardened for security purposes on the inside network. So maybe it's after. However, you want to start discussing that before, because if you go and set up the server and then that's your first question, your first time you're initiating contact is to go and ask about that, you might not know what the firewall policies are. It might not be permitted at all. It can be really tricky. But it is good. It is important to synchronize those two things, because you don't want to have just holes in the firewall that don't point to any specific machine or might point to a machine which is partially configured and hasn't been security hardened yet. All right, so we took a look at that demo. That's obviously preview software, which is not complete. But when we get there, that'll be the kind of user interface we use for installing both Azure AD Sync and also deploying federation services. So we have a couple of months before we're going to put that on the Office 365 admin portal. And so we're not going to put it on the admin portal until it's ready and supported and good to go. You can use Azure AD Sync services now in production. The thing that the other tool gives you, the Connect tool, is all about setup, makes it easier to get configured. And it's in preview now, so it's not supported in preview. But you can actually go and run it. You can look at the PowerShell that it outputs, review that, maybe edit that, use that if that's what you want to do, or go ahead and use that just as guidance and configure ADFS manually. So it's a great tool to take a look at now, even though it is just in preview. The thing you need in production and supported is the Azure Active Directory Sync services, which is there now. Yep. There is, and so the question is, should we tell our customers to upgrade? There is actually no need to upgrade from DuraSync to Azure AD Sync. Azure AD Sync has more functionality, but if customers are already using DuraSync and it's there and it's working, it's no problem. We're going to continue support for the DuraSync tool, and it uses the same connections to Azure AD. So there's no problem with keeping people who are happy and using DuraSync on DuraSync. No problem. All right, so we're going to talk now about changing between these models, and I want to recommend that you use the simplest model that your customer needs, or that whatever the needs are, use the simplest model. Cloud is the simplest model because you don't have to configure anything. The reason I say just use the simplest model is because you don't have to prepare for some future state that you might be expecting, because you can change between these models. And so here's how you change between the models. Going from cloud to sync is just actually what we did 15 minutes ago. It's about deploying DuraSync or Azure AD Sync and using that hard match or soft match to make sure your users are lined up. And then going from synchronized identity to federated identity is also pretty easy to do. You've got to install an on-premises identity provider, and you've got to configure from managed to federated using PowerShell for each domain that you want to set that up for. You could also go back. We talked already about using PowerShell to go from federated to synchronized for purposes of backup. You might decide to do this for other reasons, that you want to no longer have federated identity sign in. This takes 2 hours plus an additional hour per 2,000 users. So it takes a little while to go through this. It does take that long if you're doing it for recovering from an ADFS outage as well. So something to bear in mind. It's not an instantaneous changeover. That's the PowerShell command that you use to do that. Then the last one, believe it or not, we have customers who want to change from synchronized to cloud. Typically people who have gone to this cloud-only mantra and don't want to have any more on-prem servers, and identity and users is one of those. So we have PowerShell command to run. This one takes a couple of days, and it takes so long that we actually provide a monitoring PowerShell command. You can see how far through it's got. But the key thing in here is you can change between these models really easily. You don't have to be concerned of picking a particular one. So when should you choose cloud only? If you have no on-premises directory today and you want to go with Office 365, you may as well choose cloud. You can enter users there, and until you have a reason to have an on-premises directory, it's the simplest way of doing things. You might also use cloud if you're in pilot. Lots of people do this. They just put a bunch of users in, 10, 100 users, whatever it is, import them with a CSV file. They're already existing users in their on-prem identity, but you're in pilot, so you want to have them separate. We can soft match those later. Or if you have a directory restructuring or maintenance project going on for your on-premises directory, you might just say, okay, we're going to stick with cloud for now because I know we can synchronize later because that guy said we can do these soft matches. And we have this horrible big project going on, which we don't know how long it's going to take, which is modifying our directory. And so that might be another reason you choose cloud. All right. So if you have an on-premises directory, we recommend you choose the synchronized identity model, except if you have one of the scenarios I'm going to talk about, which is a good candidate for federated. So let's take a look at those. So I have a handful of scenarios where we're going to recommend federated sign-in. And really the reason that that people use federated sign-in is they've got some kind of unique scenario that the synchronized identity does not meet the needs of. They've got some requirement, security requirement, sign-in requirement, identity provider requirement, whatever it is, that they need that extra flexibility. Microsoft is good at solving those edge cases for enterprise-scale customers that have unique needs. So this is what we recommend. We have three categories of scenarios, existing infrastructure scenarios. The first one being very obvious. If you already have ADFS deployed, it's trivial to configure Office 365 to point to an existing ADFS. It's relatively trivial. It's pretty easy to do. Or if you use a third-party identity provider, there is no such thing as password synchronization if you're using a third-party identity provider. There's lots of third-party identity providers that work great with Office 365, but they can't do password hash sync. So you're going to be using federated sign-in if you're doing that. Also, if you're using Forefront Identity Manager 2010 R2, it does not support. It's an alternate way of synchronizing users, and it has some additional configuration and extensibility that some customers use. However, it does not support password hash synchronization. All right, if you have technical requirements, this first one is out of date. I have to change that. So you used to not be able to do password hash sync if you had multiple forests. So we added that very recently into Azure AD Sync services, so you can do that now. If you have something integrated with your on-premises identity provider, so ADFS has lots of different things that get integrated with it, typically a two-factor authentication mechanism or little cards that have numbers that come up and those sorts of things. They're very commonly integrated with ADFS. Obviously, if you have something that's integrated with ADFS that you need, you have to use federated sign-in. Some types of custom hybrid applications where you need the user to sign in simultaneously on-prem and in the cloud because you're showing a hybrid of information from both sources, then you really want the user not to have to sign in twice, one for the on-prem piece and one for the cloud piece. Like if it's a web page that is showing content from both of those. So we'd really recommend ADFS for the single sign-in capability that you get when you do that. And then forgotten password reset is actually a feature you get with Azure Active Directory Premium. You can implement it using ADFS and by having extensibility into ADFS, you can implement a forgotten password reset that way. So you can pay the extra subscription charge to Microsoft and you can get this in the cloud. You can use federation, and you can get this from actually many of the federated identity providers also support this as well on the identity provider. So federation, this may be a reason that you want to go to federation. All right, policy requirements as well. So I've got some policy requirements, the first one here, if you require sign-in audit, remember, if you sign into Azure AD, then there's no log in your event logs on-premises. So it's difficult to get a report out of when did the users sign in or when did the users fail their passwords because you typically get those things out of the event log on the domain controller. If you want immediate disable for users, there's nothing beats disabling the account in AD and having ADFS fail the sign-in because the user account's disabled. We sync password changes up to the cloud every 2 minutes, but we only sync user account changes such as account disabled every 3 hours. You could just change the user's password. That would lock them out. You could initiate a one-time sync, so there's other ways of doing an immediate disable. But for convenience sake, if you just want it to work out of the box, ADFS sign-in will be blocked immediately. That doesn't stop users who are already signed in and already have their token. You need to do other things to block those. It's a great question. There's actually two levels of tokens. There's a sign-in token and a refresh token, and they have different times based on the different applications. So Exchange and SharePoint and our client apps do not have the same timeouts for those. So there's a sign-in token that each of those workloads use, and they can get a new sign-in token by asking for it using the refresh token, or maybe the other way around. But I don't actually have the times for those. That's a research project. You can look that up. Right. I think there's an 8 and a 12 and a 24 in there. And then the initial one that you have to refresh is shorter. So if you want single sign-on and minimizing the username password prompts, then single sign-on is the way to go. This relies on a thing called Windows Integrated Authentication, which is like if I'm signing on to my Windows PC, it's connecting to a domain controller, it signs me on, then IE on that machine knows that I'm signed in and it has access to the token that I've used. And it can provide that to Office 365 when I sign in. So when it gets the prompt, it's able to avoid actually showing you the password prompt and you get straight through. So that works for signing into the client applications and also for web applications. That will not work for Outlook that uses basic auth. Basic auth, you've got to have the username and the password, and a sign-in token is not equivalent to a password. So Outlook will still require that. Why does that sound odd? The reason that sounds odd is whenever you sign into Outlook, you always check that little box. It says, remember my password. And so every time you start up Outlook, it doesn't ask you for your password because you've checked that box. Everybody does this. And so we think that Outlook is doing the same sort of thing, but actually it's not. It's when you set it up, you saved your password. It's actually a reasonable thing to do. You're saving your password into this encrypted box, which is stored with your user identity on the profile on the machine. So it's not like we're just putting it on a file on the machine or anything. It is well encrypted, and it is a reasonable thing to do. It's actually also a reason why single sign-on is a little bit overrated, because lots of people will check that box, and then they only see the password prompt one time anyway. So you typically want to minimize the password prompts that you have. Single sign-on is a great way to do that. It can minimize it so that no one is checking those boxes and doing anything. But also checking the keep me signed in is a great way as well. A couple of other things here. Sign-in network location or work hours can be implemented. Work hours is implemented in Active Directory on-premises. It's not something you can set up in Azure AD. And restricting access by network location currently would be something we'd recommend using client access policies for, which is an ADFS configuration point whereby you can say if the IP addresses come from this range, the user is not able to sign in. All right. So just have a couple more things here to talk about, and then we'll see what more questions you guys have. When you're doing federation, you have a couple of different options. You can federate with ADFS, and that's going to be using WS Federation and WS Trust. You can federate with a third-party identity provider that uses SAML 2.0. You can federate with a third-party identity provider that uses Shibboleth. Shibboleth is widely used in education circles. Is there anyone here who works with those customers? I work with those a lot because they always have lots and lots of users. So that's a lot of fun. So Shibboleth is used a lot by those guys, and Shibboleth has an extension called ECP, which is specifically designed to work with Outlook and Exchange Online because it requires basic auth. So Shibboleth has that. You can sometimes get ECP with SAML 2.0, but some of the providers don't support it. And then we also support third-party WS Star providers, and we have a program called Works with Office 365-Identity, and this program is intended to pre-test third-party identity providers with Office 365. And we've got some logos for some of the identity providers that have gone through this testing. Once they're qualified, we have shared support contacts between the third-party and Microsoft, and we have been through and tested the different sign-in authentication scenarios that are required. It is unfortunately more than just a case of testing one username and password and sign-in, it works. There's lots of these different scenarios. Windows Integrated Auth is somewhat complex in testing SSO, whether you're inside of the network or outside of the network, whether you're doing passive auth or active auth or those sorts of things.
The different clients, they authenticate differently. Like
they sure do.
Link 2010 checks for NTLN, Link 2013 is the other way around.
Yep. Yeah, so we test all of those things in advance and then we add the third party into this program. The program is defined at this URL, aka.ms/SSO providers. That's a TechNet page which has simply a list of the providers and any caveats or qualification criteria that came up Windows Integrated Auth is a common one that they can't do. There's a couple there you can see that don't support the active endpoints that are listed there. It's really unfortunate that we didn't have the active endpoints for such a long time with Shibboleth and SAML 2.0, because the Office clients for licensing require those active endpoints. We actually have an update for Office clients, which is coming out, was just recently announced, and that update allows passive auth directly from the Office clients using a library called ADAL, Active Directory Authentication Library. And we have a blog post that we've published on blogs.office.com that you can take a look at. We are starting to make that available in a private preview. Because this is such a this is a change to sign in for Office clients, which is used by lots and lots of people, we're rolling it out pretty slowly just to make sure that it doesn't impact people and users can't sign in. So there's a private preview available for that. All right. So summary, please choose the simplest of these three models for whatever your customer needs are. And don't be afraid of changing between these models as needs change. Cloud identity is the simplest. Synchronized identity is the model that most of our customers use. And federated identity model is still recommended if you have one of those scenarios that suggest it. All right. So are there any other questions, any other discussions? Yes. There is reporting that is available from Azure AD, which is separate to Office 365. Okay. And so that would be a question or an investigation in the Azure AD portal. So Office 365 wraps most of Azure AD, and so that when you're adding a user or doing anything like that, it just looks like you're using Office 365. But actually, it is this separate service that we've always used in the back end. Azure, of course, azure.com, portal.azure.com, is a separate set of subscriptions, and one of those is Azure AD Premium, and you can associate an Office 365 tenant and the directory from that with an Azure subscription, and there are additional capabilities you get. One of those you can look at into is reporting. If you provision a user in Azure AD in an Azure subscription, then you're provisioning them on a directory which is used by an Office 365 tenant, in most cases they will show up. It's possible to add a user off of a Microsoft account which is not compatible with Office 365, and they won't show up. I think they'll show up, but you can't add a license to them or something. So then you still have to go in and assign a license from Office 365. But essentially what you're doing in Azure with an Azure subscription or an Azure AD is you're just viewing the directory that Office 365 uses with your tenant from another portal. And that other portal has a different looking UI, different color scheme. It has some different options and other things that you can do.
Our goal, we're a large church and we have about 5,000 volunteers. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, right. Right. So actually, that's no problem at all. You can do that just with what I showed. You sync the synced users. Other users you add and edit in the cloud as you see fit.
Can we then convert them to an AD user later? I know that's very difficult in the past.
Yes, you can. Okay. It is not such a... When you say convert, you mean they're a cloud user and I want them to be an on-premises user?
Yes.
Right. So what you're doing there is you're actually going to export them from the cloud. Then you're going to get a list. You've got a CSV file or something. You're going to import those into AD on-premises. And then when they sync back up to the cloud, it will notice that they're the same.
You'll do the matching. Okay.
Yep. So it's relatively straightforward to do it. There's not a single button to do that for. If the users are in...
They're sitting only in the cloud, but we want to share resources from people within our domain on-premise. Can we share resources?
If the users are in your Office 365 tenant in the cloud, so they're like where I had this They're one of these in-cloud users.
Right,
but they show up in Office 365, and you've assigned a license. Then you can definitely share resources with them from SharePoint Online.
Can we share on-prem resources with them?
You cannot share on-prem resources with them.
So they cannot log into the domain. They cannot, there's no way to treat it like a one-way.
That user, Paul Andrew, with that account, he doesn't exist on-premises. So you can't share an on-prem resource with him.
Okay.
I feel like I'm missing something behind this scenario that was yesterday. Okay.
One of the scenarios they gave us was that you could have a contractor and you could create them in the cloud and then give them VPN access within our domain.
I'm not familiar with how you'd set that up. I know there's a ton of interesting things being worked on, but I'm not familiar with that. All right. Anyone? Yep. Is it possible to synchronize one domain to multiple tenants? And I assume you mean a forest, so an on-premises domain in Active Directory. Is that right? Yep. So it is possible to do that. And what you have to remember is each user that signs into Office 365 has a sign-in name, and we identify the domain to go and validate their password based on the domain in that sign-in name. So it's pandrew@microsoft.com. We know that microsoft.com, which actually implements ADFS and has a certain endpoint for ADFS. So if you have a single forest on-prem, you can't synchronize users that have the same domain to different tenants in the cloud. Make sense? But you can synchronize them to different tenants that use different domains. So essentially what that means is you can split your on-prem domain by OUs that use different sign-in names, and you can sync those with separate instances of Azure AD sync services running on separate machines to separate tenants. Okay? In practice, there's a number of issues with that. It's super hard to move a user from one to the other, and you have to make sure that the UPNs don't overlap in the domains that they have. But there are some scenarios where we've worked with people who need to do it. It's actually pretty straightforward to set that up, if as long as you you can't have one user with a sign-in domain in two tenants, and you can't have what's the other thing you can't do? You can't have multiple AD sync installations connecting to a single tenant. So there's some severe limitations there, but you can do some interesting scenarios.
So we have them separated by OU and UPN. One OU-UPN combination and the other should sync to two different tenants without much effort.
Yeah, not too much trouble. Yep. There's no essential conflict there. You just have to make sure you don't sync the same users into both. In some cases, you might actually want to sync the users. So like if you have Microsoft.com and Contoso.com in your forest, you're syncing the Microsoft.com over here, Contoso.com over here, you might actually want to sync your Microsoft.com users into the Contoso tenant as contacts. And you can actually do that, and they'll appear in the GAL. They can't sign in or do anything, but you might want to set that up. Yep. All right. We've run out of time a bit here. I'll hang around, but let me just pack up because I'm sure there's another talk right after.